south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. All right, something of a minor milestone's happened today. This is my 600th Expat Files, Living in Latin America show. That's nearly 6 years worth of shows running two a week. And you know, one of the amazing things is that I've been able to go this long without getting fired. But I think I know why. Because, you know, this is 100% truth, pull no punches alternative media. In other words, unlike the first world bought and paid for media, I don't have to suck up to anyone or kiss any advertiser ass. Nope, no editing, censoring, or brown nosing here. Better yet, I'm always broadcasting from somewhere south of the border. I haven't done a single one of the 600 shows from a country that doesn't speak Spanish. Which would make it awful difficult for Big Brother to send down a killer drone now, wouldn't it? Have to have a pretty big battery pack and be shotgun resistant. By the way, next time you listen to a show that's purportedly giving you information about being an expat, question how long that guy or gal's been an expat, and question where they're broadcasting from. If they're not broadcasting as an expat in another country, well, how good is that information and what's the point? Because, you know, lately there are so many people out there preaching this stuff who haven't got much information or boots on the ground, just trying to hook you so they can sell you something. But you knew that already, right? That said, let's get on with the shoe. Everyone wants to have a nice, solid internet connection. I mean, that's the basis of business and commerce, right? Which is why one of the big questions people ask me all the time is, how are the internet connections in Latin America? To which I always say, if you're near or in a town, small, medium, or large, they're going to be just fine. Or situated near a big road or a highway, that'd be fine too. Whereas if you're out in the boonies, you might not be near a cable run. And it'll depend on where the cell towers are. And they're virtually everywhere, but more spread out in the countryside. Then, you'll be able to use one of those USB stick mobile internets, like I'm using right now, and how I send my shows when they're done, up to New York and elsewhere, for rebroadcasting, etc. Now, of course, having one of these wireless internets on a stick is kind of a last resort. You want a solid, wired internet connection if you can get one. For your home office, of course. And for your smartphone, well, that's another thing altogether. There's plenty of coverage there, but that's not really where most people who have internet businesses tend to run the show. It's usually in a home office. So then how about all these first world subdivisions and home developments going up? How's the internet there? Yep, with this great big real estate bubble throughout Latin America, there are countless numbers of truly first world subdivisions and real estate and business development projects that look like they were transported directly from a high-end area in the States. However, you have to look out because many of them have very low occupancy rates. Keep an eye out at night and you'll see very few lights. In fact, it always sort of cracks me up when I drive by these places and you see the big billboards in front of the entrance saying stuff like, last chance, buy in now, only two units left. It's now or never. Or some such pumped up realtor rot. Yep, that's the con lately, but it doesn't fool everyone. And how do I know that? Well, because when I drive by certain signs, I see they've been saying the exact same thing, last two units available, for the past 2 or 3 years. How's that possible? Anyway, if you decide to rent or buy in one of these new subdivisions and there are only 20 or 30 homes occupied in a 200-lot housing development, there's a good chance you'll be stuck with using one of those tiny wireless USB modems like I said I'm using because the big cell phone and internet companies won't wire the place unless they have a minimum of about one-third occupancy. In fact, I've been down to the big internet company offices like Claro and Tigo, and that's exactly what they've told me. Once they've got around a third occupancy, they'll wire the place. So for all intents and purposes, it looks like a brand new upscale first world development. But there won't be any hardwired internet or even cable TV until they get the right numbers. However, if you're just the average internet user, don't let that bug you too much. You can always use a wireless USB modem like I do out in the coffee fields. They're pretty damn good now. And fast enough for moderate internet users. However, if you have a couple of people online in your home at the same time, you'll want to have one of those little USB modems for each person. In fact, I tried running one through a router to disperse the signal, and it's just not enough for multiple users. However, for a single user, or if each user in your house has his own USB modem, it's plenty good. And you know, up till about a year ago, I couldn't say that, except during the dry season when there was no rain or clouds. Then, even years ago, a USB modem was perfectly fine, even though back then they were hooked up for only 3G. Now, they're all 4G. And believe it or not, they work at their highest speed in the foulest of weather. Shocks the hell out of me, really, because I've noticed that people who've got satellite TV, that is a dish on the roof, when it's raining heavily, oftentimes they'll lose their signal for a while. Meanwhile, the little wireless modem in the other room just keeps on chugging along. Now, as for me, I have a pay-as-you-go modem. It's one of those you charge up regularly. Or you can get one with a year or 18-month contract. But then you'll have to give them all your personal information and bank account stuff. Some expats with contracts have an SA corporation that owns it, or they get their lawyer to handle it, which are other ways to keep a very low profile and keep your name off all the paperwork and such. But if you really want a low profile with little or no hassle at all, get one of those little pay-as-you-go USB modems. In fact, some gringos I know have a regular internet contract service and one of those little pay-as-you-go modems that they use for personal and confidential stuff, and they run it through an IP tunnel to double their security. More on that in another show, so stay tuned. So how do you charge up those little wireless modems with dough and minutes? You do that by going to a little tienda, giving the guy behind the counter the phone number on the thing. They do have phone numbers, you know. That's how they connect to the system when you first plug them in. So normally I'll put maybe $20 into my modem, and I select a plan where I pay just under $2 a day. I could select a plan that charges more or one that charges less, but that works out best for me and what I do on the internet. Now, depending on the plan you choose, you can select between 2 and 10 megabits per second. But like I said, that's only been in the last year or so when they changed over to 4G and beyond, or what they sometimes call 4G Lite. Now, I know, for some of you up in first world land, 5 or 10 megabits per second is like taking a slow stroll through the park. No great shakes. Especially you guys and gals out there who have the latest and greatest iPhones and Androids, and a million apps going at once. Even so, 5 to 10 megabits per second is plenty good for 95 to 98% of all gringos down here who just use the internet as normal people would do. Plus, the fact that these days, the internet rarely cuts out. Although, do note, this is Latin America, and something can always go wrong, and you could end up spending 2 or 3 hours down at the local internet provider office. Yep, spinning your wheels for a while, getting pissed off, and wondering why they've got 3 times as many people as necessary, and still, you can't seem to get anything accomplished. Everyone seems to be doing something, but at the same time, seems to have a thumb up their ass. Well, that's because our first world upbringing has programmed us to lay out the problem and expect some immediate, efficient action. But this is Latin America, which is why you're bound to get frustrated with a lot of things you see down here. Bottom line, things just never seem to happen fast enough for the likes of us gringos, especially with the language barrier, which is why so many of us, when we can't get our point across, just get louder. And some of us boil over and blow a gasket. All the while, the Latins standing around watching the show just can't see why someone would get so upset. In fact, in my case, I used to blow a gasket regularly, but that was in the first 2 or 3 years I was down, when there was no internet and practically no decent cell phone service to speak of. Back then, people with landlines felt lucky if their call got through on the third try, but that was then. All right, let's talk about some internet speeds. Here's some stats for you. From an article that came out yesterday in a popular Latin American business journal, it says, according to cloud services provider company Acame and their second quarter worldwide internet report of this year, it states, Costa Rica is falling behind the rest of Latin America in internet speed and connectivity. Costa Rica has had an 8.4% drop in the average connection speed compared to the same quarter last year. Adding that between late 2014 and June of this year, Costa Rica fell 20 positions in broadband internet ranking. Compared to other Latin countries, close to the bottom, surpassing only Paraguay, Bolivia, Venezuela, and Belize regarding internet connectivity and speed. Reporting that the average internet speed in Costa Rica is now at 3.5 megs, Then it says, only 27% of internet connections in Costa Rica are higher than 4 megs. Costa Rica's loss of competitiveness recently is due to the basic deterioration of their infrastructure, with internet speeds far below the world average and below most all countries in their region. So why is that, you might ask, when it's a place that's packed with gringos who expect first world tip-top internet connectivity and speed? In fact, Costa Rica has more gringos per capita than any other Latin country. Well, it's easy to see what's at fault and who is to blame. Costa Rica has a state-owned electricity and telecommunications provider, one of the few Latin countries who has not completely privatized those utilities. Boy, if that doesn't say it all, huh? That said, if you're somewhere along on your Plan B right now, you're going to want to know this information, the average internet speeds for various Latin countries. Oh, and by the way, if you want this report, just send me an email and I'll shoot it off to you. It's in PDF. And in English, how about that? Okay, just briefly. It says the United States has an average megabit per second speed of 15.3, which ranks it at number 17 globally. Now remember, we're talking about average speeds here, not peak internet velocities, which are almost never achieved consistently. For example, the United States can peak out at 69 megabits per second, though very infrequently. So for our purposes, we'll be talking about averages. In the States, 15.3. Canada, 13.7. Mexico, 7.4 megabits per second, which puts it at number 63 worldwide. Then you've got Chile at 7.0 at 66. Uruguay, 6.5 megabits per second, ranking at 72 amongst all countries. Peru, 5.5, ranking at 84. Argentina, 5.2, ranked at 87. Ecuador, 5.1, ranked at 89 worldwide. Brazil, 4.8, ranking it at 92 worldwide. Then there's Colombia, 4.6, ranking at 97. Panama, 4.5 at 98. Bolivia, 2.4, ranking it at 129. Paraguay, 2.0 at 135 worldwide ranking. And Venezuela, ranked way down at number 142 worldwide at 1.8 megabits per second velocity. Then it says, with the exception of Venezuela, all Latin countries saw positive growth on a yearly basis, ranging from 1.8% in Colombia to 37% in Panama. Now, it also says in Latin America, if you want speeds upwards of 15 megabits per second, you can get them. You have to pay, of course, and or be in the right location. But all Latin countries, including Venezuela, do have some users getting over 15 megabits per second. But get this, that number in Venezuela is 0.1% of the internet users. That's 1 out of 1,000. Whereas, for example, in Mexico, 4.5% of the population using internet have over a 15 megabyte per second velocity. That's about 1 in 20 to 25 users. Just about the same stats for Chile. So yes, bottom line, internet for average users is slower here in Latin America, but we're not average users, are we? So all you have to do is sign up for a plan where you get the speed you want. And even though you won't be able to get those fantastic speeds you hear about in South Korea and such, you can't get those in the States and Canada either. But that said, the speeds you can get down here are completely adequate for whatever you've got to do on the net. In fact, I know a number of gringos with 100% internet businesses who don't complain at all about it. In fact, they say it's just fine. One gringo expat I know quite well, who came down to one of my expat insider seminars, he's been down a couple years now and is here for good. And guess what? He has an internet business that has 1.5 million clients. That's right, million. And he handles all that from a little office in his house in a high-end neighborhood, not 20 minutes away from the coffee fields that I'm broadcasting from right now. There you have it. Just remember, if you want really fast internet service, you'll have to live in or near a city. Or, for example, in or very near areas with high-end subdivisions. That would include many long stretches on the Pan American Highway, because that's one of the prime sectors for the big real estate bubble where all the high-end growth is going on. And remember, if you want or need really fast internet or have an internet business, all you have to do is go down to your internet provider and they'll quickly upgrade you to a business package. Down here, businesses get high priority over individuals when it comes to internet. Of course, that means if you have a business registered with an SA corporation, whether it's in your name or not, you'll automatically get shoved to the top of the pile. You'll be first in line. In other words, it always takes a little bit longer, a little bit more mañana time if you're just a private individual requesting upgraded services, whatever. So how fast do internet companies get things done if you request a change, upgrade in service, or have a problem? Well, remember, in the last few years, things have changed dramatically for the better because almost all internet utilities are now owned privately, except in those oddball cases like Cuba, Venezuela, Belize, and Costa Rica. So if you're going to live there or set up an internet business in one of those countries, good luck with the customer service. Now, in the rest of the Latin American countries, where the government has sold off at least part of their internet and utility services, it's the foreign company or the foreign partner company that does the customer service, thank God. However, we're still talking about Latin America here, and old mañana-style habits die hard. Like I've said many times before, the term customer service is not a concept generally known to the Latin public. However, when Latin governments or Latin businesses partner up with first world companies, customer service does generally improve dramatically. But still, to us gringos, almost never to our complete satisfaction. Oh, and by the way, I just thought of something that should make you laugh. I remember a couple of decades ago when I first arrived in Latin America, there were some local brands of junk food in the tiendas and supermarkets. And of course, there was always a small section of expensive imported first world junk food brands like Cheetos and Doritos, Lay's potato chips and such. So even back then, Latin countries had a tiny variety of their own crappy brands of junk food at half the cost of the U.S. import brands. By the way, pretzels have only come down to Latin America recently. I'd say more than 5 years ago or so, you couldn't find a pretzel if your life depended on it. Not a big fan myself, but just to mention it in case you are. Anyway, as mentioned, all Latin countries had their own versions of very common junk foods like cheese curls, corn chips called tostadas, and potato chips, which, by the way, down here are called papalinas. Papalinas. And of course, we mustn't forget the fried pork rinds called chicharrones down here. God, are those disgusting. But you know, I'll never forget what one Latin friend once said to me while we were sitting around with expat Eddie at one of his sushi restaurants in San Salvador. He said, "Your American import junk food companies have taught our junk food companies a bad lesson." He said, "Until you guys flooded the market here with your junk food, all of our junk food packages were filled to the brim. Now they're just like American junk food. When you open the bag, it's only half full." Boy, was he right. Did you ever open up a bag of U.S. junk food and see it any other way? Yeah, I remember when I first got down, the Latin junk food companies did fill their stuff to the brim. Then, wouldn't you know it, after that conversation, expat Eddie sent me an email with a link showing where a lady up in the States got together with her friends and sued one of the big junk food companies for false advertising. Simply, again, because the bags were half full. Yep. Sue, reason 2,476 why you just got to get that plan B in action and get the hell out of the U.S. You know, get out of Dodge. Though I digress, but not too much. We did mention expat Eddie. The other day he brought up a very interesting point about restaurants in Latin America. He is the expert since he's owned quite a few. For one thing, he says, "Johnny, you know you're way off the gringo tourist trail when you cannot get a menu in English." And that's a good thing, he says. And secondly, if you don't have a menu in English, since most gringos don't speak Spanish, many are mystified by the menu, but are often so self-conscious and don't want to appear as dummies that they'll order stuff that they absolutely don't want or have an appetite for because they don't want to look like, well, clueless gringos, even though they are. They're thinking only an idiot can't make his way through a simple menu, so they order blindly. That said, today we have expat Eddie's ABCs of ordering from a Spanish language menu. First, the simple part. A menu is menu. Hard to screw that one up, right? Then the waiter or waitress, the mesero, will say, "Para tomar or para beber," which means, "What will you have to drink?" Now, one of the odd things is that carbonated drinks are called gaseosas. You know, they have gas in them, so gaseosa. Or they'll call them aguas. Now, we all know that means water, right? But in Latin America, a soft drink is also often called agua. Don't know where that came from, but it's true. However, it does solve the age-old question gringos always have. How come when we want plain old water or bottled water, the waiter will say agua pura, which means pure water, right? As if you might not want pure water. Maybe you want to live dangerously and have some toilet water or gutter water or sewer water. Well, actually, there is some logic to saying agua pura. They call drinkable water or potable water agua pura because they use the term agua for other kinds of drinks too. Like, for example, sodas and non-carbonated sugar waters that look like Tang and such. Yuck. Man, down here they've got tons of colored sugar water going around. It's like the Kool-Aid capital of the world. But surprisingly enough, you don't see the brand name Kool-Aid. Just everyone else's artificial sugar water brands. And believe me, the kids, especially poor kids, are addicted to that stuff because it's half the price of Coca-Cola. So don't be confused about the term agua. It could be water or any kind of non-alcoholic drink. That includes fruit drinks and lemonade, too. Limonada. Not too tough, huh? Now, getting back to the menu. Generally, on the left side of the page, there'll be the appetizers or starters, called in Spanish, entradas, or less commonly, boquitas. And drinks of any kind, alcoholic or not, are referred to as bebidas, with a B. Now, the main dish on a menu is called a plato fuerte. Now, plato means plate, easy enough, right? And fuerte means strong. You opera lovers, piano players, and Italians out there would know that one. So, in a way, it does make sense. The strong plate, which is the main plate, the plato fuerte. Now, desserts in Spanish are called postres. Sounds like pastry. Postre, that's easy to remember. And coffee is café, and wine is vino. Tea is té, sugar, azúcar, salt, sal, whiskey, vodka, vodka, and napkins, servilletas. Most of it easy to figure out. A lot of that stuff sounds like the English counterpart, or sounds like the right reference word in English. And when you want to check, you can say la cuenta, por favor, or la cuenta. But for most people, they just take the easy way out, signal the waiter or waitress, put their hand up in the air, pretending like they're writing something. That's the signal for check, please. So no words are necessary. And again, throughout Latin America, the tip is almost always included in the bill. Generally, 10%. By the way, you know you're on the gringo tourist trail if they not only add that 10% propina, it's called, that's a tip, they also add some kind of hotel, restaurant, or tourist tax, which could be anywhere from 5 to 20%. God, I hate that. It's just government extortion, plain and simple. By the way, speaking of junk foods, restaurants, and the influence of bad first world habits, if there's one thing that really drives me nuts is one day a year when they have their annual McDonald's Kid Day here in Latin America. Man, if that isn't an obvious ploy to hook poor kids on that kind of junk. Yep, it's McKid Day. Hey, I'm not making this stuff up. That's when, leading up to the event, you'll see posters and billboards and newspaper ads depicting very poor but happy indigenous kids at the Golden Arches. So, on that one day, McKid Day, all the McDonald's throw a big bash, sound systems and stages are set up in all the McDonald's parking lots, public school and even some private school kids get the day off to go to the nearest McDonald's and participate in the festivities and get their free Happy Meals and such. In fact, it's hard to believe. On that day, you drive past a McDonald's, and you'll see Ronald McDonald and all his scary-looking zombie friends doing skits on stage and handing out gifts and freebies. And believe it or not, TV stations even broadcast from McDonald's parking lots that day. But it's really sinister. It's all about pulling poor kids into the McDonald's mindset before they can even afford to buy a Happy Meal. Yep, it's all about having future customers forever. Yes, but if you talk to the sponsors, they'll say it's all about helping poor indigenous kids who never get a chance to enjoy the toxic pleasures that middle and upper middle class kids can engorge themselves in with regularity. By the way, hamburgers are known in Latin America as hamburguesas. Easy, huh? Hamburguesas. By the way, on McKid Day, they even have beauty contests where the local young teenage girls come by, vie for the coveted title of Miss McDonald's, Miss Hamburguesa, that's Miss Hamburger, and Miss Papas Fritas, that's Miss French Fry. Yes, impressive resume builders to be sure. I can imagine any young girl with the exalted title of Miss Hamburguesa or Miss French Fry would simply stun any university admissions committee. So yes, beauty pageants are a national pastime here in Latin America. And wouldn't you know it, even McDonald's has them. Oh, and since we're talking about food and things that are almost like food but not quite, Latins do have an appreciation for oatmeal, especially in the morning. However, down here, the name for it is mosh, M-O-S-H. Yep, like a mosh pit. When you first see a bowl of mosh, which is oatmeal, you think, man, great word, really descriptive. Why didn't us gringos think of that? Mosh or mush. So now that I've planted that image in your mind, you'll never forget a good old bowl of oatmeal is simply mush in Latin America, or mosh. Same thing. Okay, getting close to the end of the show now. So I'd like to remind you once again, I've got a few spots open for my January 2017 Expat Insider Seminar. You've got through the end of this month, October, to get in on the early bird discount. That's a $500 discount for a single person and a $1,000 discount if you come down as a couple or two people sharing a room double occupancy. Which is why some attendees coming down as singles ask if I can pair them up with another so they can share accommodations and get that discount. Sure, we've done it before, so ask and you shall receive. Probably. So anyway, you've got till the end of the month to sign up for those early bird discounts, and then it's back to regular price on November 1st. Just go to www.thenewexpat.com, click on Johnny's 2017 seminar link at the top of the page for full details and sign-up information. And while you're there, do check out those very special John Galt pre- and post-seminar tours. Since after all, when you're coming down to Guatemala to do the seminar, you want to get as much quality boots-on-the-ground time as possible, and there's no better way than to take one of John Galt's pre- or post-seminar trips. In fact, some people take them both. The pre-trip being 4 days and three nights directly before the seminar, and the post-trip, 4 days and three nights directly after. And by the way, for those of you who just can't swing coming down to the seminar, or can't work it into your schedule, get the time off, whatever, the next best thing to get that Plan B started right from the comfort of your own home up in the States is to check out my new Expat Essentials course. Just go to www.expatplanb.com. All one word, and check out the three videos I've put together explaining the whole thing. That's www.expatplanb.com. And finally, don't forget to check out my YouTube channel, YouTube/TheExpatFiles. Do subscribe, it's free.
South of the border.
This is The Expat Files, living in Latin America. If you want me to help you out with your own Plan B, just schedule a one-on-one consult. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to learn how to move forward with your own Plan B from right up there in the States, go to www.expatplanb.com and check out my three videos. See ya. Nos vemos.